This is the Kaptar podcast. I'm recording this on the 9th of February in the year 2019, and I'm sitting in Oslo. So this is the first international edition. This is a podcast in Norwegian, even though I have recorded actually three interviews in English. And my first three episodes have been in Norwegian, as they have been interviews or conversations with my friends who are happen to be runners. So it's actually been a podcast about running up till now. This conversation I'm going to have today is not going to be about running, even though we mention running, even though the man I'm speaking to is also a runner. But like everything in life, you're not only one thing, right? So Sid Garza Hillman is actually, I would say he's a philosopher. I think he has a major in philosophy, and he's also a runner. He's an ultra runner. He has his own race up in Humboldt County in Mendocino, where he's from. He is a nutritionalist. He is a musician. He is an actor. And he's also a father, a husband, and he works at the Stanford Inn in Mendocino. Really great place that we went to eat when we were there. But okay, let me tell you the background for why I did this interview. I guess I can be honest enough to say that Sid Garza Hillman is one of the reasons that I started the podcast, because I guess his podcast is the one I've been listening to the most since he had his last podcast, Approaching Natural, and now he has a new one called What Sid Thinks. Just search it up on iTunes, it's really good. Well, the thing is, I have to back up. This conversation is from this summer, in July. And it's recorded in Sid Garza Hillman's house in up in Humboldt County, just outside Mendocino. How do you pronounce it? Mendocino, maybe? I'm uncertain. Depends. I'm Norwegian, so I'm not really sure. But the thing was, I had listened to his podcast. I had listened to a few other podcasts. I had been pretty influenced, and I had been thinking, how cool wouldn't it be to just start my own podcast? What should it be about? Well, should be about everything. I think about everything. I'm like interested in art, philosophy, running, music, movies, spirituality. Well, kind of. So it should be about anything, but where shall I start? Oh, I have to start with the simple stuff. I have to start with running. That's the reason I started the podcast. I've been running for 4.5 years, maybe. And I started listening to podcasts like right away. I don't listen to music when I run. I listen to podcasts. And for some reason, I came over his podcast, which then was called Approaching Natural, that he ended about a year ago or so, last year. And well, he has a new one. So don't be afraid. You can listen to it. It's called What Sid Thinks, and just find it there on iTunes, because it's friggin' good, as he would say. So the thing was, I was going to California this summer together with my to-be wife. We got married this summer in San Francisco, and my two kids and another couple. And we were going on a road trip from San Francisco up to Avenue of the Giants, you know, where the big redwood trees are. And I knew that Sid Garza Hillman lived up there, so I thought, what if I send him an email, ask for an interview, and on the way up, we just go via wherever he wants, and I'll record the interview. It would be really cool to have an interview with Sid Garza Hillman on my podcast. Wow, that's a good idea. So I sent him an email. He replied. He was really nice, and he was like, yeah, sure, he wanted to do the interview, and when, and so forth. And I was like, yeah, we're going to be there then and then. And he was like, oh, no, oh, sorry, I'm on a road trip with my family. And I was like, okay, but on the way back, where will you be then? Oh, then I will be back in Mendocino. So let's meet. And we actually made a meeting, an arrangement for me to come by his house, actually, because he has a studio in his basement where he records his podcasts and his YouTube videos. So what happened was that we drove down. I had my kids, my wife, and our other friends with me, and we left him in Mendocino, and I drove back to him. And being really nervous, I remember finding his address and going out of the car, and he was like meeting me there with his... I remember he had no shoes and no socks. I just remember that. Can't tell you why I have that picture in my head, but it was kind of cool. I thought, yeah, he's cool. He's just walking around without any shoes on. Yeah, that's cool. I won't do that. But, well, I live in Norway and it's always cold there. So, well, actually, Norway is on the 59 north latitude. Or is it called longitude? That's almost as far north as Anchorage in Alaska. So if you're coming to this podcast from the United States or anywhere else, Oslo is that far north, okay? But it's not that cold. It's actually not that bad. Right now it's winter, so it's cold and snow and so forth, but summers are warm here. Probably like Northern California, I would guess. But anyway... So we sat down and did the interview, and I've been listening to it, and it's a good interview. I enjoyed it very much, and Sid has a lot of good things to say. So I would recommend, first of all, that you get his book. It's called Approaching Natural Health Manifesto, I think. He also wrote another book called Raising Healthy Parents. So if you're a father or a mother, I would also recommend that. As I was saying, he's a philosopher. So I guess his approach to things are based on his philosophy, which is take one step at a time. He has, I think, a program called Small Steppers. So if you want to integrate something new in your life to try to become a better person, you should include small things at a time. And we all know this. We try to, let's say, we want to change the way we eat, or we want to change the way we train, we want to run a marathon. You just don't go out and do a 10K the next day. You start with 2Ks, and then 2 days after you do 3. Then you stay at 3 for a while, and then you take another step. So I guess this sounds very simple, but in our lives, we always make things really complex, don't we? And that's why we fail. So this isn't a conversation about failing or anything, but it is a conversation that maybe will inspire you to read one of his books, listen to his podcast, yeah, and make some changes in your life if you feel you need it. I guess none of us are perfect. I'm usually thinking a lot about these things when I'm running. So you might be running, and if you are, here's my conversation with Sid Garza-Hillman.
Yeah, whenever you're ready.
And I guess before we start, I should check the time. So how long should we...
However long you want.
Yeah. So we'll just see.
Yeah, let it roll.
Yeah, I guess it comes to a natural end at some point. I have left my two kids and my to-be wife. And
they're traveling. That's what I was wondering. Because you said I was like, there's nobody else in the car.
No.
I wonder if he knows that there's nobody else in the car.
I came here only to see you, Sid.
Oh, great. All the way from Norway?
There's no road trip.
And faked that you had a family. That's so embarrassing.
There was no road trip. It was just...
Yeah, you know, I dropped them off at the gas station.
I was sitting 4 days out here just waiting for you to come back.
Oh, wow, right outside. Oh, that's what that white van was doing.
Yeah. No, I left them in Mendocino. We came there on the way up, and we stayed at the Mendocino Hotel.
Oh, the Mendocino, cool.
And I actually forgot to deliver back one of the keys.
Oh, so you had to go back to Mendocino Hotel. Got it.
Yeah, but luckily I could meet you today, so
worked out.
Okay, but first of all, thanks for meeting me. My pleasure. That's really generous, taking the time.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah. And I've been a long-time listener to your podcast, Approaching Natural.
Cool.
Which is now history.
It is now history.
Yeah. It goes into history books.
It does.
That's a good podcast.
Yeah.
One of the good ones.
Yeah,
so I thought maybe, okay, but maybe back up a little bit before that. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could tell me a little bit about yourself. Yourself, your background.
Like how far back?
When were you born?
I was born in 1968.
Yeah.
And then cut to, moved around a little bit. My dad was an airline pilot for a while, and then he worked for the airline in non-flying stuff, you know. Anyway, and so, but ended up traveling a little bit around, moving a little bit around, and then went to UCLA in Los Angeles, where I was born, but then after traveling, ended up back in Los Angeles and graduated from there in 1991 with a degree in philosophy.
Then
decided that I always joked that it prepared me perfectly for what I was really trying to do, which was to play indie rock music.
Uh-huh.
And so I began playing music and working wherever, basically, in that. Right after college, was at the audiovisual department at UCLA. So I just graduated and then got a job on campus. And it was really a great time, actually, because it was a bunch of writers and artists and actors and musicians. And it was all just people who wanted a really easy job. And then they could do their other stuff. And so it worked out perfectly. And I tutored kids at night just to kind of, you know, make enough money to survive, basically. And I would play shows.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years into, about 3-4 years into that, a guy who was a friend of mine, but it was coming to my music shows, gave my photo to his acting agent. He was an actor, and they ended up signing me. So I, within that next year, started working enough as an actor that I was able to leave that one job and start acting. So that's what I did for the next 10 years. Got married in 94 to my wife, Lisa, who you met. And
so actually acting, you were an actor?
I was a professional actor for over 10 years. Yeah, and it was a not expected turn. It just worked. Like, again, it was an easier job.
Yeah.
I had even more time on my hands. So
if I understand this right, you did a philosophy degree, but you wanted to be a musician.
Yeah.
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 But ended up acting instead.
And still playing music.
And still playing music.
So my gigs. Passion was music, and yeah. I was, as you can see, all that stuff over there is a lot of that stuff still from that day. But my job was as an actor. That's how I made my living. And I got married to Lisa just before I started acting full time, just around that time, actually. I'd known her. We went to college together, so I'd already known her, but started acting and kept that up for a really long time. In 92, I graduated a year before. This was my sort of entrance into nutrition and healthy living, was given a book and I read it and made a change to my diet, and my asthma went away after my whole life of being an asthmatic. And so that was the beginning of me reading, just out of pure curiosity and interest, not because I thought I would ever do it as a job or anything related to it, but I was fascinated with how that happened. And so I...
Like getting rid of your asthma?
Yeah. How diet affected it, like within a month.
How did you come onto that track, like diet and nutrition?
Somebody handed me a book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, somebody handed me a book.
What that was?
Or? Fit for Life.
Fit for Life.
Yeah, by Harvey and Marilyn Diamond. I remember it to this day. In fact, when I went back to school to become a nutritionist, they still cited that book. That was in 2009, and they still cited that book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot about food combining. It wasn't a plant-based book per se, but you could tell, like, when they talked about the sort of combining of foods, it was clear that, you know, more nutrition laid sort of in the plant realm. But it was all about more like body cycles and digestion. And there must have been some, I haven't even looked it back up, but there was something in that book about dairy and inflammation and or asthma. And I thought, oh, that's kind of weird. And so I just kind of gave up dairy.
To try and see.
Yeah, because I forgot what the hell. Yeah. You know, I mean, I was an asthmatic. I didn't like being an asthmatic and being a singer.
Did it bother you? Like when you were...
Yeah, I'd run and have an inhaler. And you know, people, have you ever had asthma? It's really uncomfortable. Like doesn't feel good, period, you know? And I never made the connection with dairy. Otherwise, I would have given it up a long time ago.
Who would think that asthma has something to do with...
Not me. Yeah, and I didn't know anything about nutrition. I mean, really, not anything about nutrition. It was more just, I was working... it was actually in college I started working for an actor, being like a personal assistant. And it was he and his wife who gave me the book. And so here, read this. Check it out. And so I did, and my asthma was gone and within a month. And that was clearly, like, that was the deal. That was obviously what was set. I wasn't plant-based at the time. I didn't even know what brown rice was. I was eating the cheapest food I could find. I remember I'd go to a Korean market with this guy that was a roommate of mine, John Atsuji, and we'd just buy these big bags of white rice. It was like the cheapest thing, you know. And I, for a while at UCLA, before I started acting, I'd either boil potatoes, and then I'd get mustard at the campus restaurant, free mustard packets, and I would just dip potatoes in mustard, or I would just make a huge thing of white rice and carrots, and then I would get soy sauce for free from the, and that's just what I ate. Like, we didn't have any money, you know. I was making like no money, and so that was just like sort of what I ate, you know.
Because the salary of acting
just
is really
low. Exactly. No, this is before I started acting. Okay. This is when I was at UCLA. Yeah, once I started acting, I was making actually decent money, so
Is there anything we might know about that you played in?
Men in Black. I mean, I have little bits, but they're there. Principal, Men in Black 2, and My Best Friend's Wedding, and Arlington Road, and City of Angels, and I did some TV. I was a guest star on ER for an episode, and just stuff. A lot of commercials, you know, like a lot of day on a commercial, and then I would make enough money from that to live for 6 months. You know, it'd be this is weird, like American Express and Western Union and Sprint and all these big companies, and for a while I was working all the time.
Did you enjoy it?
I did for a while. Yeah, I actually, as a day job, it wasn't my passion, but I liked it a lot. And I remember one of the lessons I always remembered, and I've talked about it in the other podcast, was that my acting agent, he said, you know, you work a lot because you have other things going on besides acting, because I was a musician. And I always remember that to this day, like about how I talk about sort of people diversifying their interest, not being super hyper involved with just food or just fitness, you know, kind of. And I think success for me as an actor became because I didn't really give a crap. Like if I didn't get jobs acting, I would just find another job. It wasn't, you know, and people who I had auditioned with, that was their whole lives, the way that music was for me, actually. And maybe that's why I didn't do as well as I wanted to in music, because there was so much wrapped up in it. I wanted it so bad. But acting, I didn't really care. Like if it didn't work out, I'd go back to UCLA. I just didn't care. It was a great job. And so
because
I just,
you also had an education that was in philosophy.
Yeah. And so, I had an education. I could go back and I could go, you know, I had options. But it just worked out. So I worked and worked and worked. And then eventually, you know, after 10 or 11 years, it sort of kind of started to not, there was a few things that changed. There was a strike and a writer's strike, and there was reality TV started happening, and so there was less jobs for actual actors. And so just because of those reasons and me just being burnt on Los Angeles, we just decided to move up here. But that was the deal.
How did that come about that you found? Because I've seen Mendocino, it seems very different from...
It
even has its own climate.
It's kind of like that. Like if you drive even like 45 minutes inland, it's like 95 or 99 degrees, and then here it's 65.
That's what happened to us.
It'll
today.
Be a 30 degree difference.
We came from up Avenue of the Giants, really hot these last few days, coming here, and I just saw the clouds.
It's like gorgeous.
And the other day also coming up, mm-hmm. we were just suddenly the fog came in. Mm-hmm. It was like, this is the Pacific climate.
It's pretty great. Yeah, part of it was weather. A lot of it was just Los Angeles for 20 years, you know, just taking an hour and a half to go to the post office, you know, because it was just traffic and you know, it's fine. It's city living. And for a while I loved it, but we just got burnt. You know, we were just like, we got to get out of here and get some space and get not have to be spending a lot of our time doing crap, you know, like errands, you know. Yeah.
I have an impression of Los Angeles is like this enormous city that you just have to drive everywhere.
You have to drive. You basically, it's the stereotype, or like the, you know, people make fun of it that way, but it's absolutely true. I mean, there just isn't. I rode a bus to work. It would take me the longest time to get to work in a bus. For a while, I rode a motorcycle in Los Angeles. It was great. It wasn't the safest thing, but it was great because when I was acting, I was riding a motorcycle. For the first year of my acting, I was still working full time. So at UCLA. So my agent would call and say, hey, we need you to go out there for an audition. And I'd go to my boss and go, hey, can I peel off? He'd be like, yeah, but I just got on my motorcycle, would drive right to the place, kids park right in front, because it was a motorcycle, and drive right back to work. And I did that for like a year until I had enough money that I could quit, you know? And, but Los Angeles is just, it's brutal. And it really is. It's just, it wears you down. You know, you can go, you can spend 40 minutes going 3 miles and just, you're just, you know, and I don't miss it. you know, there's, I have friends there that I miss, but I don't miss the day-to-day living. I don't. I like my kids can just bust around. And
do you go back?
Now and then. Yeah. Like I spoke there last year and I've gone back a couple times, you know, for either book. When my book came out, I had a book thing down there. I spoke at a veg fest down there and I'll get down there now and then. But I'm not jonesing. I go to New York almost. I go to New York every year, the last 4 years, to speak there. I love New York because, again, it's got less city feel, but also you can get around because it's public.
I've only been to New York prior.
It's a better city. I mean, I love Los Angeles. I know, but it's New York. It's just a better city. It's more fun to be there. You know, I don't know if I want to live there, but it's more fun to sort of negotiate and day-to-day get around. And people walk. You know, LA, you can't walk anywhere even. You know, you're just not out. New York, the streets are full of people walking around Manhattan. You know, it's pretty great.
So, when you moved here, was that when you started to write your book that I want to ask you about, approaching
the natural? That all happened once. I mean, again, like I had, so eventually when I began reading on nutrition, I was still playing music, I put the band together in 98 and we started touring in 2000, 2001, 2002, like around the country. And I went to Europe in 2005, a couple times to tour. And
Norway?
Never been to Norway. I know, and I'm dying to go to Norway. I would love to go to Norway. I've never been that high up.
We have to get you invited to some.
I would love to come out.
There is a vegetarian festival.
Is there? I'd love to come out. I spoke in Edinburgh, Scotland, a couple years ago. Yeah. I'd love to get out. I've been all over Europe in terms of, you know, when I was playing music, but mostly like Germany, Austria, Belgium, London. I did one show in London. Netherlands, played a couple shows in Netherlands. So I've been around that sort of like tight area. I've been to France and Italy and Spain and other times.
I'll see what I can do. If it's up to me, I'll try to get it.
Good. I expect that'll happen. Anyway, no, I really would. And my wife's got Norwegian in her, you know, and I'd like to actually get, I would love to get up there. It's just beautiful. And
it is also kind
a
of
better country.
But it's also very different. Like where I come from or where I live now, I don't come from there, but where I live now, Oslo is like a big city with all its things,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But also you have so many small places
around
the West
Coast. Are you in Oslo, like in the city?
Yeah, I'm in the city of Oslo. Yeah.
How many people?
I guess about 700,000 now. And Norway's like 5 million.
Yeah, yeah, the whole country. About like Scotland's like the whole country's 5 million, which is insane because LA County is like 8 million. Yeah. I mean, it's just great, right? County.
I can't believe
it. It's insane. Yeah. And that's just, you know, and then Mendocino's 1,000. You know,
1,000
In the town. Yeah, people go, my God, must have been a shock. I'm like, no, I was totally ready. I mean, Lisa and I were just burnt. Yeah. You know, in fact, Scotland was one of the reasons we moved up here because Lisa and I had been to Scotland in 2002 before we even had our first daughter. We tried to move to Scotland. We were already thinking, like, we got to get out of this place, it's going to kill us, you know, and we tried to figure out a way to move to Scotland. And just couldn't do it financially and couldn't do it. We just don't know what we would do once we showed up, you know.
It's far.
But when we were finally like really, I think probably a little more me was just like, this place is killing me. Like it's killing me. And still thinking about Scotland. She goes, what about Northern California? And I was thinking San Francisco, right? Because in LA, that's Northern California. And she goes, no, like north of San Francisco. I was like, there's north of San Francisco? You didn't even
is
know.
There anything there?
Yeah. And she goes, you know, like we started looking at these little towns. And then this is in 2005, and I was actually in Europe playing, and she was emailing me, like, look at these. And she was thinking maybe in a couple of years, but just for fun, she'd be like, oh, look at these cool houses in Mendocino and Fort Bragg. And I was like, whoa. And this house that you're sitting in right now came up. She emailed me, and I was like, oh, that house has got studio space. She's a graphic designer, so she's got studio. I was like, I'm obsessed. And so when I came out from Europe, I got so crazy about it that she finally was like, go up and look at it because you're driving me nuts, you know? So I flew up here on a Monday and looked at this house and a couple other houses and then flew back, showed her video of it. She and I flew back on Thursday. We offered on this house on Friday and Saturday it was done and we put our house up for sale in LA. Like so it was within nice. 6 days. I'd never been here before. And that's how perfect this place was and also how ready we were to get out of LA. Like we were just like, and when we finally got up here and moved in and we were sitting in the kitchen and I was sitting on the counter and we both looked at each other and went, what the hell did we just do? Because we had no plan, you know, no plan. And like a year later, we're living off credit cards. We had no idea. Like, it's just like so poorly. And we had a kid, you know, it was just so poorly executed in terms of, but we sort of managed it out, you know.
But really things are like that sometimes, that you do something and you don't really understand why. And, you know, further down the road, there's a plan for it.
Yeah. Well, it turned out to be good. It was a little nerve-wracking.
So how did it come about that you started to write a book about Well, I've read it, and it's not really about nutrition, but it seems to me like it's more of a total philosophy of life.
That's right.
That's how to approach kind of we call the natural.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, is it the antithesis to culture, or is
not
it more
a
like...
A little bit. It's not... So real quick, so when I kept reading on nutrition and then got up here and was like, you know, I was working as like a bartender and a server, you know, at a restaurant at Sanford Inn, actually. And I was already plant-based at this time because I'd been reading so much about nutrition, and Lisa and I were both plant-based, and we became that in 2002, just after the Scotland trip, actually. And so reading about all that stuff, so I had already become plant-based 100%, and got up here, and I just kept reading, and finally I was talking to people about it, and they were asking me questions about it, and I thought, I think I want to go back and do this for real. So I went back to school, did a year and a half program in nutrition, and started practicing as a nutritionist. But
can I just ask?
Yeah.
When you say went back to school, was that like...
It was a correspondence.
But when I'm thinking nutrition in school, isn't that very like traditionally based?
Not the program I did. So I did not become a dietitian. In the United States, there's a difference. Yeah, there are a huge difference. So much so that when I was looking into dietitian programs, I was like, I ain't touching this one with a 10-foot pole. I'm not going to sit through courses of corporate influenced information, knowing a lot of the stuff that I already know. I frankly just needed for it to be real, and so that I could be insured, I learned a ton in my program, but I definitely had done reading for 15 years on it, you know, book after book. So I had a wealth of knowledge, but it was more like I needed it to be formal so that I could actually be like a real practitioner. That's what I was really looking for. And so I did that and started practicing with people local. I would like people I knew, and I'd sort of be like, I'll do this for free, or I'll do it for just because I wanted to sort of build my approach, my style, how I was going to do this. And I found out within 2 months how much of a bigger picture this was than food, and people weren't following I would give them the plan, they wouldn't follow it almost every time.
You were giving them like a nutritional plan?
Yeah, they'd give me that. They'd come to me with a thing. They'd want weight loss or pre-diabetic or something. And I'd say, okay. And I'd get their, you know, look at their blood tests, and I'd get their, you know, what supplements they'd been on and what medications. And I would craft a plan, and I would give them the plan. And it would say, eat these things and make suggestions and these times of day. All the things that I learned that's what I really learned in my course was like how to be a nutritionist, you know. But it just wasn't, it was just failure after failure. People just would not, I would see them 2 months later. How's it going? Well, you know, it's like it would never work. Mm-hmm. And that was the inspiration for Approach to the Natural. I backed out again and said, okay, first of all, I didn't feel good taking people's money. And second of all, it wasn't work. It really was not, it wasn't real. And it was like me basically handing somebody a diet. And diets fail. They're just not you don't have the right mindset for it. Yeah. And so,
yeah, because it is like, I guess you're on the way to saying it, but when I read the book, it was like, I guess I read the first part a while back. Then I read the last part now,
mm-hmm.
and most of it actually.
Yeah.
And it is like you said, it's like backing out and seeing the kind of holistic
view.
Because if you start to integrate only one thing, it's so easy to fail. But maybe you can tell me more about how is your kind of approach, or how is your philosophy around this?
Yeah, well, it started with me just being like, why aren't people following my stuff? I kind of had an inkling, but I was like, this is because I'm sort of looking at my plans going, I still stand behind them nutritionally. It's not that the knowledge wasn't good. It was just, you can't get the benefit of, I'll put it this way, like in the Western world, we have an expectation that if we're slightly uncomfortable with a headache, we have a pill that can fix it. If we get a bacterial infection, we have an antibiotic, and that's amazing. When it comes to things like fitness and diet, they're long-term by definition. You can't turn, that's why cleanses are kind of funny to me, because I've never recommended a cleanse, because it can be a good help to get you on your way. But short of that, don't waste your time. It's if you're going to stop at 7 days and then start eating crap again, don't bother. And so I realized quickly the long-term nature of this game, that it really to make yourself healthy. And then I folded in happy in terms of the book, because I see them as the same. you got to set yourself up for long term. You have to start this knowing that you ain't going to see nothing for months, if not years. It has to be a like you said, a back out, look at the bigger picture of this, the whole package. And when you do that, then you kind of take your time and kind of build it in a way that's going to last. Because if you don't literally don't waste your time. It's going to cause you more stress. Yeah, and
it's kind of what I think of us, as I call it myself sometimes, deep time. Like mm-hmm.
Interesting.
The deep time.
Yeah.
Which is like universe time.
You know? Yeah, exactly. It's like the 10,000. Have you ever heard of the 10,000 year clock? There's actually a clock that's it's the 10,000 year clock.
Oh no, I didn't know.
Yeah, you gotta check it out. I think it clicks once a year. Like it goes click. Yeah. And the idea of that is, and it's actually a real clock, but the idea of it is, you know, if we sort of embody that kind of long term vision, long view, always understanding that there's a long game here.
Yeah.
Then that will affect our choices day to day. Sometimes we'll do things that are more less healthy or whatever, but it's fine. But in general, we're going to be like, I got, you know, long term, especially when you fold in kids into the mix, like, you know, kind of like to be around for a while. It's more important than any Twinkie, you know, could ever be. Do they have Twinkies in Norway? Yeah, you guys probably aren't abandoned. You're not advanced like that yet. It's okay. you'll come around bars? To the U.S.
Yeah.
You know what a Twinkie is, right?
Yeah, I do.
But you guys don't have them in Norway.
I guess they're called something else. Is it these two bars?
No. Okay, and no, it's sad that you don't even know what a Twinkie is. It's really, really upsetting. It's a spongy yellow cake with some sort of plastic, I'm guessing, white cream that is injected into the yellow. It's okay. You're going to be okay. We'll get that over. If I ever get to Norway, I'll bring you a Twinkie.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Maybe I'll find it.
Yeah. And then it'll start a whole nother revolution in Norway. But anyway. At the time that I'm frustrated and people aren't following and I'm backing out and saying, how can I do this better? In a purely job way of looking at it, it's like, it doesn't do me any good if people fail from my recommendations. If somebody comes to me and lose weight, and they don't lose weight, then everybody they know and contact about is going to go, why would I hire Sid? It doesn't, his recommendations don't work. That's what they're going to think, because this person didn't lose weight.
Did this happen, or did you kind of see it before?
No, not specifically, but I just, in my head, I mean, nobody said, I'm not going to hire you because so-and-so didn't work. No. But I just knew, I was like, I want to be successful for myself, and also because I want to keep working. So I've got to figure out a way to get through to people in a way and an approach that actually people can take my recommendations and do them long term. Around this time, I'm driving up my street thinking about this in my head, and that's where you think about things. And I'm driving up the street and I look down in my car and I realize, I had this moment where I go, look at how far from what's natural to us as an animal we've become. I just had this moment. I was like looking at him, I'm wearing clothes, I'm in this machine, I'm driving up a hill, expending no energy at all, right? And it's not bad or good. It's just I had this moment where I was like, this is so, you know, you have those moments where you're like, this is so weird. We're such a weird, like we're a very weird species, you know?
Yeah, and
I was just in town the other day, and there's like
a little. It's very rare though.
Yeah, it's very rare because you're busy. You're busy. Yeah, but there's these moments, you know, I was driving in town just last week with my kids, and we drive into town. There's this line like around the block to this ice cream shop, you know? And it's like, we cover the ground. Like we just don't want anything to do with nature. We want to visit it sometimes, but we don't really want to interact with it. Not in a way it's dirty and kind of gross to us. But yet we are animals. Like we actually are animals. We want to package our food. We don't want to look like anything that would exist in it. We want our carrots to be perfectly orange and conical and shaped. If it has a blemish on it, then you know, can't do it. You can't put it on the shelf. You know, I started to look in a philosophy, you know, this was my philosophy background, kind of looking at it going, wow. And realizing that not only are we becoming further from what's natural to us as a species, as an animal, but at the same time, I thought, what happens if we sort of embody that way of looking at ourselves, not leaving the modern world, not going to live in the wild, but what if we just brought in, because we recognize we're still animals, what if we bring in just some things here and there that are a little more natural? Not fully, because we can't be fully natural. I'm living in a house, for crying out loud. But what if the food I eat, and what if the way that I socialize, and what if the way that I move my body mirrored a little bit more some of the things that we, even artistic, some of the way I use my mind mirrored a little more of what's natural to us? Would that set us up for long-term health and happiness? And you know, probably within a few weeks, I don't even know, but I realized that's yes. And that's where I wanted to go with it. So I started really playing around with that and really thinking about that, and then started to talk to clients about that and really realizing like starting to see already then, this is 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago, people just so hyper-focused on food. And I realized, well, this is nuts.
But why is that? Why is that? I see where I live now is like in Oslo. And where's, you know, everything is connected now because we're online. And yeah. I see that kind of people are so into the things that Americans are into, like the low carb.
Yeah, yeah. Thing. All that nuts, and nuts stuff.
They,
yeah.
they say, I even hear Norwegian saying using the word carbs,
Yeah,
even
funny.
Though it's not a Norwegian word.
Yeah, and it wasn't even the American dialect. It was carbohydrate for a while, and all of a sudden it just carbs. Like the oh hydrate just gone off the word. It's just carbs. Yeah. It's carb. It's,
well, it's the forever truth is nickname. That actually, carbohydrates.
It's like calling protein just prote. Yeah. Like we just did that with carbohydrates. We just shortened it.
Yeah, because carbohydrates is actually water and sugar stored together in the cells that they use for energy. Right?
It's called carbon.
But why is that that we're so focused on food? Because I've also been into food for some years. Mm-hmm. I was a vegetarian from 21 or something. Or let's say pescatarian because I ate some fish. But anyway, I was into food and I was wondering why we're eating this, why we're packaging things.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I was radical. I was against McDonald's, Burger King, everything. And it's just gotten worse and worse.
Yeah.
And people are like, no, I can't eat this. It got carbs. Mm-hmm. But carbs is like carbohydrate. Everything has
it's
carbohydrates
called,
because
it's the,
like,
one of the three that fuels your brain, by the way. Yeah, you know, it's like the weirdest thing that carbs are bad for you when they're the only thing that fuels the brain.
That's true.
And I'm like, and how bad can they be?
How?
Yeah.
They can't be bad at all, except when what we've done is, I was listening to your podcast coming up here, isolate it. When we isolate the sugar.
Yeah, of course. But then it's junk food.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but see, what people don't understand is it's the same thing that happens when you do that with protein. In protein powders, and it's the same thing you do that when you do it with
I don't
fat with oil.
People think that
they
because
don't.
They think, oh, I can add some protein powder.
That's right. And it's junk food. And so what I've done recently, were you listening to the Approaching the Natural podcast or the new podcast?
I was listening to your last episode, the episode 4 of the
Approaching the Natural. Of What's It Thinks.
Yeah.
Oh, because, and I talked about it there. Exactly.
Yeah,
so so I just talked about.
But you have talked about this before.
Lots. Yeah. But I referred to refined plants, like these things where we isolate protein or we isolate fat or we isolate carbohydrate, and animals that we raise for food. Then I call it technology now. I just didn't want to talk about it as food anymore. And I think, and I eat it sometimes. I don't eat the animals, but I'll eat things with oil in them, and I'll eat things with you know, if I'm traveling, I'll get a Clif Bar that has soy protein isolate. I'll have things.
I actually did today.
Yeah, it's fine.
Because I have nothing else.
Exactly. Yeah. But you recognize, it's not that some sort of militancy has to come out of this, that all of a sudden you know this and you can never do it, because what happens then is you've got what I'm seeing now, which is people too stressed about food and crazy, and they're not happy.
I think it's too much information conflicting information.
They're diving too hard and there's just too much. And then they're like so hyper-focused on just that one aspect that all the other parts of their lives are basically put down into the second, third, fourth, fifth place. And they're just not, it's one of the things. And if people remember that, then they can sort of, again, diversify and live lives that are full and have time for family and be able to go to a social, you know, to a party where maybe there's a little less than perfectly healthy food, but you're going to be okay. Yeah. You're going to survive somehow. Yeah. It's always weird to me that somebody wants to eat the very perfect diet, the very most natural diet, but then they're going to get into a car, which is totally unnatural. They're going to adjust the temperature. If it gets just a little bit too cold or a little bit too warm, we can't have that. But yet we're going to just strive to do the most natural thing. If you're going to go natural, go natural.
If you're going to try
to put it into one place and everything else you're doing is unnatural, you're sitting on a phone and you're, you know, texting people and that's the most social thing you do. Well, that's totally unnatural, isn't it? But yet you're going to try to eat the perfect. So I wanted to bring in a little more thinking into this process and say, I can dole out top 10 lists and hook people in terms of top 10 superfoods.
Yeah, which is what happens a lot. It's like, these
look
are
at the
seven
look at the internet
superfoods
and what happens
you need to eat,
right? And what happens when you don't have context? You get stressed because you're going to do your best to get those seven foods in every day, and other things most likely are going to fail in your life because you're too hyper focused. Good to know that knowledge and then move on and try to figure out a way that works for you, that makes you happy and healthy. That's the goal. But yeah, so it was very quickly that thing, and that's when the approaching the it's approaching. That's the key word there. It's not being the natural, it's approaching. It's living an ethic of understanding you're an animal and animals move their bodies. Understanding you're an animal, the animals eat natural food because they do, at least while I'm talking about not the mammals we raise for food, but the ones in the wild.
Yeah.
Animals socialize. So do we in person. You know, we're kind of we do best in that way. Yeah. Okay. It's for whatever reason, when I'm traveling and I Skype my children, you know, it's amazing to Skype them, but not on the same planet as being in the same room. I don't know what that is. It doesn't, it's, you know, it's the same. You got a kid. Yeah. Will you see them on the video? It makes you hurt more.
Yeah. That was what I was saying. It's kind of sad.
Yeah. And it's better than texting.
Yeah. It's better.
Even better than phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's right.
Actually, my to-be wife, I say to-be wife, because she is going to be, she travels quite a lot in her work.
And, you should have brought them up.
Yeah, I should have.
They could have played with the kids.
Yeah, they could have.
I got 9-year-old twins for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Although your kids are Norwegian, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem.
My oldest speak a little bit of English,
I was joking.
Yeah, yeah.
But they still would have had fun.
Yeah.
Because the universal language of play.
Yeah, yeah, that's right? True. That's true. Yeah. That's what I see also because I was traveling. I lost my train of thought there.
Oh, you're talking about it's sad, almost sadder to see them.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. And actually, when I was home alone with them and the mother was in England or Russia or somewhere, they didn't want to Skype her because it was kind of painful for them
see
her.
And yeah, yeah, and not being able to.
Not being able to touch because we're very, like,
that's right. Family. We're physical.
Yeah. We like to be
physical. We're a physical species.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're a physical
species. I think we forget that sometimes.
We do.
That we are actually a very physical species.
We're tribal.
Yeah.
We're physical.
Yeah, yeah.
We forget that. Of course we do. That's the way we separate from nature. And it's a little bit weird
seeing how people, especially men, how they meet each other sometimes and they kind of, you know, hug, but they have to slap each other.
Yeah, yeah,
really
yeah. Don't want it to be too.
No,
yeah, yeah,
no.
Yeah. 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 It's one of the many ways that we've sort of convinced ourselves that we're not animals, but we really are. We really are. And life is such that, you know, and I always joked on the old podcast that, you know, I'm not new agey. Life is such that we have very real things that we have to do, like go to work. We can't be with our families full time. And even if we were living in the woods, we wouldn't be able to necessarily be in the place. You know, we'd have to do things, but there should be more of that. And all I was just advocate is just this idea of bringing in, not putting the pressure of trying to achieve what, I don't even know what that would be in, you can't do in the modern world, like what fully natural. You can't, all the plants that are in the market aren't natural, even organic ones. Yeah. I mean, they're made up by us. We couldn't create, but they're certainly closer.
They're closer
to what's natural than the Twinkie that I mentioned, you know? And so it's by degrees of saying like, well, these are the most natural. Let me try to eke my way into those a little bit more often than not. It's pretty simple stuff. When it comes to moving our bodies, you know, sitting in front of a laptop, even if you work out for 45 minutes at a spin class in the morning, you know, sitting in front of a computer screen and never getting up for 8 hours is not natural. No. It's just not. Now,
I read somewhere that if you sit more than, I don't know, if it's 90 minutes or something, your body gets into this, it closes a few of the systems to just preserve energy.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes total sense.
And that's not good, I think.
No,
you
it's
need
not.
To get up.
That's right. You know, and then people went the other way, and now I'm standing on a treadmill all day, and that's at a desk, and that's I think that's the other swing
that's
of like
Michael Greger, right?
He does a treadmill. Yeah. And it's almost a little bit, you know, it's, I think
it's like, a little bit obsessed the other way.
That's right. And so I think this is, I hate to overuse the word balance, but I think it's and balance isn't an objective
or maybe
term for
a little bit like the middle way.
I get in some at least I'll put, it's hard for me to say like the middle way because I don't know what that is. It's up to each person because I don't know what Greger does at every other time in his life. You know, I don't know. I move around a lot during the day.
I guess it depends on your extremes or
it does. What are your extremes? Where's your middle? Where's your life? You know, when you consider all the things, like I move around a lot. I move around at the wellness center at the Stanford Inn. I'm up and downstairs all day. I don't need to stand at a you know treadmill desk because I'm on the move.
Yeah.
So
same here as a photographer. I'm really a lot around.
Yeah.
I don't like the part sitting down with my computer doing the editing and all that. It's just, you know, it's
you get all antsy. Yeah, I move and so you know what I told clients pretty early on was, you know, what I call integrated exercise, which is set an alarm on your, if you got technology in your pocket anyway, which is the stupid phone, but it's useful. Set an alarm that goes off every hour and you get up and do a few squats or you walk around for 20 seconds. You know, these little moments of just breaking that up and that is, to me, I'll fight this forever. That's more natural. It's not natural full on, but it's more natural than sitting in front of a computer never moving.
Yeah. And maybe try to walk to somewhere instead of driving.
Yeah,
or
once
take
you,
your bicycle.
That's the thing. Once you, I mean, this is the thing. Like I just got back from a trip with my family. My my dad turned 80, and so they rented a house, and we went out to Lake Tahoe. And I would go for a run in the morning with a dog, and Lisa would run everything. But then everyone would go to the lake, and I would later in the day I would run to the lake. And just people would just they all meet you there, and I would just run over there.
How far was that?
It was like a mile and a half, not less than a mile and a half. You know, but I already ran that morning. And so it would just be like, well, I might as well run over.
You can run twice.
Not only can you run twice, but like I would almost get there around the same time. By the time everyone had gotten the car and drove and parked and then walked, I would sort of show up like within minutes. And it's just this like you said, like once you kind of put it on your radar as living a little more, bringing a little more what's natural, then you start seeing areas you can do. You start going like, well, since you're already thinking about it, well, maybe I'll just take the stairs this time. Since you're already thinking about it, I'll park a little farther away and walk. I think
it's a little bit like you push your boundaries. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can actually walk there.
Yes.
Well, then I can walk, tomorrow also.
That's you. It's all on.
Maybe
about
this weekend I'll move like.
That's right.
5 miles or something.
Yeah. And the same thing. And by the way, the same thing goes for food. Like once you start sort of thinking about what's natural, then it's like, oh, well, I'm having, maybe this not so healthy thing, but maybe I'll just have some lettuce with it. Maybe I'll have a couple of apples in the morning. You kind of start thinking, instead of going all the way to a diet starting tomorrow that freaks you out and you don't know how to do it and it's stressful.
And you have like 2 ounces of that.
And you're measuring, you're spending all this time and energy, and you're setting yourself up to fail. You're going to fail. Chances are. Instead saying, let me start to look at the areas of my life that I can be a little more natural. Even if I have to spend time with a friend for just a few minutes, better than seeing that person never. Or maybe I can draw for, this is where my small steps thing came in later,
I was asking you about that, because this is, when you had the Approaching Natural podcast, you were talking about the small steps.
That's right.
And what you mean by that is that you integrate things a little bit at a time to not kind of overwhelm the system and the decisions you have to make.
That's right.
So forth.
Yes. Where I came in differently, and I always stress this is because I, once in a while, people will talk about micro steps or they'll talk about small steps, and they tend to be like, if you break down your thing into 2 minute increments, and that wasn't. Small steps to me is an ethic. It's a philosophy. It's in and of itself, like Approaching the Natural is a philosophy. And what the philosophy says is, whatever you bring into your life that you're not doing now, whatever new thing that you're going to do, if you want it to be successful and long term, you've got to. This is what I do as a job: help people figure out what amount of that thing they can start doing that keeps them in this nice little adaptive stress place, not too stressful. And not too little stress. Too little stress, you kind of sit down. You're stagnant. You don't do anything.
Yeah.
Too much stress, you're leading to burnout. Right in the middle there, you're bringing something new, and you are adding stress, but you're doing it in a way that you can set yourself up for long term. That's the definition of small step for me. It's not 2 minutes.
No.
It could be 2 minutes, but it also could be 20 minutes. I mean, if I'm a runner that runs 6 miles a day, and I want to start increasing my mileage, I might go a mile more tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
But if somebody's never run, their small step might be 1 minute walk around the house. Yeah. I'm not going to ever and never did set somebody's, here's your small step. I don't know what that is. Some people are motivated and to change their diets a lot because they already are sick or they're just done with being unhealthy, and they'll change their small step will be a huge change today compared to what other people might do. But for them, it's a small step because it's that nice little stress area. They're not stressed out by it. They're not so stressed out by it. It's not too little. It's not too much. It's that always that questioning. But it was very important to me to distinguish what my approach says versus other people who talk about small steps, because they have this idea of like, everybody's small step is this. And sometimes that's too small for somebody. They can do more. And sometimes it's too much.
It doesn't do anything really.
No, and I wanted to empower somebody that they didn't need me to tell them what size step. I wanted to train them so that they can figure it out, because they can apply this 5 years from now to anything that they decide to do. I want to try drawing. Well, if today I want to start drawing, and I go to the store and I spend $150 on charcoals and canvas and all this kind of stuff, and I spend 3 hours a day because that's what you do, and then 2 weeks later,
10,000 hours.
Yeah, 10,000 exactly. And I'm gonna get that done in the first week.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, I burn. It's like too much, and then that stuff sits there. And I have worked with people who have art stuff in their room because they used to love art and they still do, and it just sits there. Because it's just their idea is too much.
It's a little bit like middle-aged men that has a lot of money and they want to start photography, and they buy like equipment,
all the great equipment,
like $5,000.
And
it's cool for 2 weeks, and then they're finished.
Okay, and that's exactly why I realized that this was a bigger picture than that. This approach could apply to everything, because that's exactly what happens. People get and that's what a diet is. They get excited about the diet, and they go to the shop, they get the shopping list, and they get all the ingredients, and they're ready, man, and they're so exciting, and they might even lose some weight in the first couple weeks. But what happens? They go back because it's just you didn't set yourself up.
Because it's like it takes a lot of energy to change a lot of things.
Yes.
At the time,
huge,
right? So we're able to do it a little for a week or two, and then it's like, oh, I want to go back to the pizza.
The stuff I don't want to think about. Potato chips. You know why? Yeah. Because it takes energy to think about stuff.
Yeah, it does.
You know, if you're a photographer, so if I wanted to start taking pictures, do you think that if I just started taking pictures of my phone, that would be a start?
That would be a start. Yeah.
So do I need to buy $5,000 worth of camera? No, I could start thinking about it. I could read.
Yeah. Actually, most of the time, an iPhone will do better than another camera because people don't know how to operate another camera.
Yeah,
what's happening?
It's too much. Too many buttons.
Too many buttons.
Yeah. So if you get that phone, which you already have, but if you start thinking, you know, it's one thing to do with Instagram, but if you're actually like, I want to start taking pictures, then all of a sudden you're thinking about it that way. That's
you
the
think
start.
Composition.
Yes.
Maybe?
Now all of a sudden you're thinking
about basic rules.
Exactly. And maybe you look on the internet and you start reading about it. That's a step. Yeah. To me, that's a step. Yeah. Sometimes I advise people.
And you can look at all the photographers that do nice photos.
Okay. So now you're thinking. Like a photographer. Yeah. Okay, so instead of buying the camera and just going out and shooting, you're actually thinking about it. And when you think about it, even before you take your first shot, you're already you're putting some thought behind it. And that's at least the beginning of potentially a long-term change. Yeah. You're not going all the way and have these ideas of what who knows? But when you just say, all I need is a phone, let me start thinking about composition. Let me go on the internet and start looking at some articles, watch some YouTube videos. I mean, the amazing time that we're in is that you can do this now. You don't have to go to the library and get books, and you can go on the internet and get classes for free. Like, it's nuts. And you can at least start experimenting. And then if you like it and you're doing this for 3, 4, 5 months, then, you know, spending a couple grand on a camera may be totally appropriate. I mean, I've got this nice microphone.
Yeah.
I didn't get this until 5 years after I started my first podcast. Yeah. You know, I just got this, you know.
A cheaper microphone will do in the beginning.
It will be fine.
Most people won't notice anyway.
They really, really won't. Yeah. I mean, there's some things that I liked about this one just because like on the nice thing that I can pull over to
me. And it's dynamic, right? So if you move in.
I love it. I mean, I love this microphone. Yeah. But it's totally nerdy. Like probably nobody knows the difference.
No.
I mean, really probably nobody knows.
But
I like it, and so it's fine.
Yeah.
But I didn't get this and spend this money, you know, day one. I wanted to be a podcaster.
Yeah.
And so that meant setting myself up and like doing it for a long enough time. And I went from that microphone over there to that microphone that you see over there. That's that one. And so I've sort of stepped my way into more and more professional equipment.
So how long was it since you started the podcast?
The new one?
No, the Approaching Natural.
The Approaching Natural I started on September 11th of 2013.
Okay, yeah.
September 11th, 2013. And then
Did you think about it for a long time before you started, or was it
a little bit? So the quick thing on that was my book, Approaching the Natural, came out in January, end of January, 2013. That's when it came out. I didn't have a Twitter account. I think on Facebook, like barely, if ever at all.
I can hardly remember how Facebook looked.
Yeah. I don't even, I did nothing of that. No. And so here the book comes out and, published by this publishing house down in near the Bay Area, and I naively I think, okay, my book got published, they're gonna send me out some stuff and they're gonna, you know, promote it, and luckily around that time in February, I think, there was a publicist working on it, but very little. Like, we just didn't have the publishing company. It was small, still is. They did my second book too, but they didn't have a lot of money. So they spent a little bit of money on this publicist who happened to know Rich Roll.
Okay. Yep.
And so he said, I got this guy, he's going to blurb your book. And I said, well, that's cool. I didn't really know who it was. I think I bought Rich's book at the time, Finding Ultra.
Yeah. That was about the same time, a little bit.
I think it was a year before,
or
something like that. And so he blurbed it, but Rich really liked the book. At least he said he did, and I believe him, because then I was going down to LA to do a book event set up, and Rich, and so this guy Tyson, he says, Rich wants to have you on his podcast. I did not even, this is not a joke, I'd heard about podcasts. I had never listened to a single podcast in my life. I had no idea. I didn't even know how to download them. I knew nothing. I had no social media. I was doing nothing for promotion at all. So there I sit and go down to LA and do this book event. And then I go over and Rich, and then I actually had a thing with Rich. Rich and I did this like thing, a little Q&A kind of thing. And then that the day before I had gone to his house to record this podcast, much like you're doing here.
Yeah.
And I go into his garage. And I'm sitting, it's in his garage, and it's fine. It's a nice place, you know, in this cool house. And I'm like, this is cool. I don't think literally anything about it. I'm like, fine. And we talked for like 2 hours. I had a great time. We really hit it off.
I remember I went back, and because I started to listen to the Ritual podcast, and I guess yours and the No Meat Athlete.
Right.
Athlete.
Yeah, Matt, yeah.
And I think I went back to listen to the episode where you were in, but I guess that must be 2 years ago since I heard it.
Oh, yeah,
and
probably.
That was 3 years prior.
After that, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So there I am sitting there, and off mic, I think after we finished the recording, he was asking about the book, and I said, yeah, it seemed like, you know, I thought it was going to have more stuff. And now he was on a way bigger publisher than I was and still is. And he said, and this is why I always will support Rich, because he basically really helped my career because of that podcast, which I had no idea the reach that he had at the time, even, and now it's bigger.
Was it big?
Already is big. It was already big.
Yeah, yeah.
And still to this day, people go, I heard you on the Ritual podcast. Like, it was huge.
Yeah.
He's great. But he also said, let me tell you something, Sid. My book had already been on almost 2 months at this point. He goes, let me tell you something. He was on Crown, which is like a big publisher. He goes, I thought, too, like you, that when my book came out, I would get a list of bookstores that I was going to be doing the tour. And he goes, nothing. He goes, I had to call bookstores myself. And sometimes I would call and there would be two people. I'd do a book reading. There'd be two people there. Well, that was, my book was already out. So I went, uh-oh. And so I flew home and I told my wife, I was like, I'm like, this is bad news because I have done nothing I expected. All this stuff that was going to, and nothing. I mean, not nothing, but I mean, I was on the Ritual podcast, but again, I didn't even know the value of a podcast. So I just started emailing bloggers. I just started searching on bloggers that were sort of talking about this stuff. And I just would email them, say, I have this book that just came out. Would you be able to review, you know, would you be willing to review it? And I got responses. And one of them was Matt Fraser, the No Meat Athlete.
Oh, yeah.
That's all Matt. Matt emailed me back and said, yeah, I'll send me the book. And then he featured it, and all of a sudden it started, the word started getting out.
I think it was from him that I heard about the book and the podcast.
It could have been, yeah. It could have been. He featured it on his like top five summer reading list, you know? And then all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh. Well, anyway, so I got off my ass and realized I had to do the work myself, clearly. But because of that podcast too, Rich's podcast, I started thinking like, you know, and this is probably my acting career a little bit, and maybe the music, I felt comfortable. And I thought this could be a medium for me. Like, this kind of sounds fun to talk to. And so I started, a buddy of mine, Mike Fehrenkrog, who just passed away last December, unfortunately, but he helped me get set up. And he goes, this is an app. Try this one. Here's what you do. And here's how, and he set me up with to listen to a bunch of like, not related to health, just podcasts in general. He goes, this is good. And just so I get a sense for about the next 6 months, I just started listening to podcasts. That's all I did. I listened to WTF podcasts. I listened, I think Joe Rogan, I don't know if you've been out or if you listen to it, but then I would listen to like finance, to whatever, just to, okay, here's how it kind of rolls, you know? And so then September of that year, I got that microphone right there, which I already had because of music. I just had it. I got a thing like this that converted it to USB that I could plug in my laptop.
Yeah, you're just
and
recording.
I started going and that was it. I had no idea where it was going to go.
A little bit like me. I decided to start this. I don't know where it's going to go, but
all
I'm influenced by Ritual, you, other people. I've listened to podcasts for as long as I've been running, which is for 4 years maybe.
Uh-huh.
It's just great when you go on long runs. People are, don't you listen to music? No, I want to kind of learn something as I run.
Yeah.
It's great because you have nothing else to do. It's like
you're
very focused on what you do and you kind of integrate it into your...
Yeah. There's nothing... I mean, I am such a podcast, just like a fierce defender of podcasts because it's to me, the way that, you know, shows are like on TV where it's they're broken up into segments because you have to break for advertising. Then they're limited by time because the show only lasts so long. And then they're limited by things you can and can't say. And then you've got podcasts where you've got this ability to go actually deep. And to me, I'm going to be a weirdo this way, but it's more natural. To me, it's a step. It's a step into more actual open communication.
Yeah,
that we can sit and have a conversation and not be dictated. I got to go.
That's it. It's like a conversation.
It's a real thing.
Yeah.
So real information is getting there.
Yeah. Instead of a radio program, sometimes you listen to on the radio and there's a discussion and they say, well, we have to cut off now, people. Yeah, it's the news at 6.
Yeah, exactly. And it's edited later, maybe. Yeah, and these could be edited, sure. But a lot of the podcasts, every one of them I listen to, almost everyone, is freeform. And it lasts a long time and you can get deep. And after that 2-hour conversation with Rich, I thought, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's a little bit like deep time also, because he sits down and has these long conversations. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have to listen to a podcast maybe over 3 runs. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And the beauty of these apps is it picks up right where you left off.
Yeah, it does.
It's like there's nothing bad about it. Like, it's amazing. My only thing that makes me bite my nails is if sometime some regulation happens or some, right now it's like, to me, it's the last subversive medium. It's like nobody can touch it right now.
Oh.
If that changes, man, the world will be worse for it.
All the media is kind of...
Yes, it's dictated. Yeah, that's right. And I'm sure there's podcasters out there that are sponsored by companies. And I mean, I know there are, but maybe I don't know this, but maybe there's exists some podcaster that are sponsored by companies. And because of the companies they're sponsored by, they have to, sort of make their... Maybe they have to change their message a little bit. I don't know.
And they say no foul language.
Yeah, who knows?
Don't talk about this.
And I'll play that game. Yeah. That's why I love Patreon. Like, that's kind of how I'm being supported now a little bit better, because it's like, then it's direct to the people and it's not through, Casper mattresses or whatever. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Not to say I wouldn't like the money. I don't like reading ads. And to me, it's like,
Live off the podcast.
No, I don't. I'd love to, but I still don't know if I'd like to go the sponsorship realm, because I just don't know.
No, because you talk about this on your new podcast. Mm-hmm. It's like you have no sponsor and you're not really interested. Because you have said on the new podcast that I'm taking my gloves off on this
one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I have listened to the 3 first ones, and I must say I really like
it.
Oh,
you do?
Okay. Yeah, I love it. And as you said on it, I think you had 6 months off was a good thing.
It was, yeah.
You did 222 episodes of the Approaching Natural.
222, yeah.
And one every week.
Every week. You never missed a week.
Never missed a
week. Not only did I not miss a week, I never banked it. I never even banked. In other words, I didn't do like... I didn't record like, 4 podcasts on a given day. and then wait. I would actually record it every week.
Yeah, yeah.
For 200, I can't believe that I did it. I mean, looking back, I cannot. I carried amazing. My microphone. Yeah. Like, I go on this trip I just went on with my family a couple years ago. Like, they did it before. I brought my microphone with me, and while on vacation, I go upstairs and I record this. But I did it. I did it in Edinburgh. I did it in Atlanta. Everywhere I would travel, I'd bring my microphone. I would record it on that day, and it was the weirdest damn thing.
Yeah,
looking back now.
Yeah, but it's not like, you have your thoughts wherever you go. So sometimes when you're alone in a hotel room in Edinburgh or wherever, you can just speak, right?
Yeah,
what's on the
great. It was fantastic, except that looking back, especially toward the end, there were days where I was like, I really could use a break.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I was like, no, but it's a weekly.
You have to push it.
Yeah, I started seeing me getting locked into my own plan, which was in the beginning, which was, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it every week. And that's what I'm going to do. And that was my plan. And that was amazing. And it kept me doing it. It kept me learning about it and being engaged in it.
Yeah.
But there was clearly a point where that kind of shifted into a thing where now I have to do it every week.
Mm.
And then it was starting to stress me out. And that's when I realized this is going to be having to shut down. I didn't, you start a podcast and I mean, I sort of in the back of my mind knew like, this isn't going to last forever. Like, I'm not going to do the at 80.
But it did last like 222.
4 years and 3 months.
That's 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years and 3 months. Yeah. And never.
And it's not like you quit. You said, okay, I'm taking a break. Maybe it'll be 2 weeks. Maybe.
Well, I didn't even know. I mean, if you look at, did you hear the last episode?
I did.
I didn't know if I was coming back.
I did.
Ever. I mean, I was like, maybe I'm just done podcast. I didn't want to say I'm coming back for sure, but I also didn't want to say that I'm not coming back.
No.
I just didn't know.
But that was a good thing. Didn't say either or.
I wanted the freedom in my own head. Yeah. It's like, I wanted the freedom to come back.
Because sometimes people say like, oh, I'm never going to do that again or blah, blah, blah.
No, but I remembered loving podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
And even up until a few weeks before my last episode, I enjoyed it. Yeah. It's just that more often I started feeling a little stressed by the gotta do it. If you listen to 221 the week before the last episode,
there's no sign.
No plan. In my head, there was no plan. in my head there was like, I'll revisit this at episode 230. I'll sort of think about it and assess where I'm at. Still no plan. And then that following week.
But the difference between the Approaching Natural podcast, which you talked about small steps, mm-hmm. integrating things into your life.
That's right. My approach.
Yeah. And the new one, what would you say the difference is? You say taking the gloves off, but does that mean that, I think you said in, I was listening to you on the plane over the number 3, which was about Independence Day. Uh-huh. And I think at some point you said, it's a fight.
Yeah,
it's like,
this is a fight. Yeah. Now I'm seeing it this way.
What will you say? What is the fight? The kind of fighting.
I guess what I'm seeing is that. So the other podcast, like you said, was really about my approach, and now I have smallsteppers.com. You can learn about it if that's what their thing is. So I kind of like, if you want to learn that, it's cheap and you can do that. But now I really want to buckle into the actual, like, the ideas of the world and how I see things through the lens of health and happiness. And to say the fight of this is to understand that there's a lot of things at stake here. This isn't about a scale weight. It never was. It's never about, my stomach's flat. This is how I see it. Like, this is the survival of the human species. This is the survival of the earth. This is the survival of my children. Yes, this is a big thing. Yeah. And I'm about to talk about it when I do the podcast, the next episode, which I may do it today. I don't know. And I like that too, because I can do it whenever. But it's like, we can't afford to BS around this anymore. No. Like, we can't afford to sort of kind of ease our... I'll put it this way. My approach is still small steps. But I want to focus on, instead of the execution of this change via small steps, I also want to focus on how important it is that we start taking care of ourselves. This is not about diabetes. This is about the next generation. This is about us now. This is about people that are affecting you and me every day. And I'm going, I know this people make fun of me for this, but I'm going, if you would just take better care of yourself, you might be a little more able to handle the stress of the world and be able to do things that are actually helpful and be able to work hard to do your job, if that's what your job is, to be a politician or whatever. Yeah. I'm looking at this, the degrading nature of in this country anyway, of the conversation is being so about, you know, nobody listens to anybody else. Everybody's pissed at everybody. Everyone's angry, and it seems
to me like there's a tougher climate now than it used to be. I mean,
There is, and
I think it's changed a lot. Of course, with a new president coming in,
for sure,
being a bully.
Yeah, he's a bully. Absolutely. And you know, I've talked about for years.
He has diplomatic skills.
And
that toughens the whole climate. It does.
Well, what I've always said is, and you know this is because you've listened to me, but you know, to me, it's first and foremost about setting the example. And look at what's happening now. When you have the top, any company is going to, the climate and the environment of any company is set by the top.
Yeah.
That's who says, this is how it's going to be. Well, look what is happening now. It's exactly what I expected it to be. When you have somebody at the top who is saying it's okay to abuse people, it's okay to treat people with disrespect, it's okay to lie, it's okay to cheat, and you can in your mind maybe justify and say, okay, well, these things are worth it because these changes are going to be made, and I'm going to, even though these things are bad, I'm still going to, and that's a complicated issue. Maybe it's okay to hurt a few people if the larger culture gets helped. I don't know. I do think that there's a more subtle danger to having that kind of example at the top, even though we may get a better relationship with North Korea, which I don't think we will, but maybe we do. Maybe we do. Who knows? But there's collateral damage along the way from having this kind of lack of ethic at the top. That's why I believe. That's why I'm taking the gloves off. And it's not. This isn't a political show that I'm doing. It's not about the president.
No,
this is about both sides and about the lack of character. You know?
You did say something about. You were talking about the parties, like.
Yeah.
Two parties, and then they were talking about, okay, forget about that, and you went out.
Yeah, you like, back out of
humans, and then you were, I think I'm going, or I'm, I can't remember what you said. You said something like
going hippie, probably
hippity dippy, hippity dippy,
yeah.
And it's about the earth, you know.
Yeah,
and that's kind of, this is the message that I'm also very interested in from a kind of personal view that. Mm-hmm. Shit, it's the earth. It's like, hello.
That's what I mean. The fight's
one
on.
Organism.
That's right.
Why do you think people are forgetting that we actually live under a extremely thin atmosphere in the middle of space
with
a planet that's, you know, very fragile, actually?
Uh-huh.
We keep on treating it like it's
brutalizing
not.
It. Yeah, yeah.
But it is, you know, something is happening, and I can kind of, traveling here, it's a little bit like, yeah, we went to see the big trees, and you know, with the heat and everything, I feel like there are things happening to the climate. And now in Norway this summer, we had some extremely hot weather. Yeah. No rain. The farmers are like in trouble.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we had that here in California. Yeah, yeah. Last couple of years, a huge drought.
And how long will it take, do you think, for people to actually understand that we need to reverse?
Well, I'll tell you what. I can liken this to my nutrition practice, which is, in the very beginning, my best clients were people who already had cancer or were already sick.
Yeah, because they see that. Yes, and unfortunately, I'm gonna die,
so, exactly. So unfortunately, for most people, it has to get so bad. And it might be too late, and that's a huge disappointment for me.
Is, yeah, you know,
and
that's
why I've got the new podcast, because I want to dive in on that level and say, you wait that long, you know, if you don't realize the fight is now, then when you are, it's so bad, it may be too late. And it's not to scare people, but it's like, you know, people who deny climate change, is like, worst case scenario, maybe human beings aren't the cause of climate change. Maybe. Okay, maybe all the 99% of scientists who see it is, maybe that 1% is right. Okay. And maybe we just believe those 99%, and maybe we eventually find out, oh my gosh, they were all wrong. It actually has nothing to do with humans. I would still argue it's better. Like, along the way, we've sort of put thought into things, tried to be kinder, tried to cause less pollution. Like, nothing is bad from just trying to act better. Nothing is bad about trying to be kinder to people. But there's nothing bad about it. There's no negative there.
I think people are kind of going around just hoping there's no climate change. That we're
and why? So that they can still abuse the earth. And that's the thing. It's like, if you develop an ethic of care about yourself, and that's where I come.
Yeah.
And then it bleeds out into how you care for your family and your friends and how you care for the earth.
Yeah.
There's no negative to that. Maybe the science comes in and car pollution has nothing to do with climate change. So what? We've still learned how to be a better human species. We've still improved ourselves. But I think we want it to be fake so that we can just still not be good people. And that's why I'm taking the gloves off. I'm like, we can't do that anymore.
I'm thinking of, this is something else, this is psychology, but I have read a psychologist here from California. His name is Robert A. Johnson. You read his books?
No, I don't think so.
No, he's a great psychologist. He's like a Jungian psychologist. Okay. He's talking about the shadow, you know, the dark side, that people live their dark side. And he's talking about the kind of importance of having some ritual to kind of use your dark side, because you have to use it. I think this is also an important thing, that people has to see that, you know, we should be good people, but we also have to acknowledge that we have a dark side.
Sure,
so we're going to do bad stuff.
Yep, absolutely.
But try to do that bad stuff
minimally.
Yeah, minimally. Yeah. And but need to see that it also has to come out. So try not to do it to yourselves or other people or animals.
Yes.
Or,
And what does it take to determine both what is good and kind for us, and both what is that darker side? It takes thought.
Yeah,
it takes thinking about things.
Yeah.
Now, is it hard to think about things? Yes, because you got two kids, I got three kids, my wife and I both work. I don't know if you and your wife, I know you do, but your wife to be, if she work, we're busy. We're reading the news. We're freaked out by stuff. We're stressed about stuff. So it's for somebody to walk in, even if it's me, and say, hey, think about it more. Well, that's hard for people, include for me.
It's kind of like when you sit down at a family dinner, you don't want to say that. Do you know what's happening to the earth?
Exactly.
You're polluting, you're eating animals and blah, blah, blah. Well, nobody wants to hear that.
Nobody wants to hear that's a great point. But in addition to that, what I'm saying is, what it takes is actually somehow finding the time to contemplate, to sit and think, to slow down enough to look at stuff. That's hard to do when we're all so busy, much less getting mad at somebody at the family table. To create your own opinions and to create your own ideas means figuring out how to find the time in a very, very busy life to think about stuff. That's huge to do.
We have to acknowledge that we have to take away a few things.
Yes.
Like maybe not binge watch Netflix.
That's right.
Like every day.
Hence the small steps.
And maybe start reading a book 10 minutes.
That's what I'm saying.
When you go to bed.
That's what I mean. Or 5 minutes before you watch Netflix.
Yeah.
Starting to carve out a little bit more. That's what I'm talking. That's why the small steps approach, I'm so passionate about it, because when I'm really, and again, like, I don't want people to think 100% like me. I don't even tell people what I in terms of clients, I don't go like, here's what I think you should think. I want them to come. People often say, like, I'm vegan, and I don't hide that. I've been plant-based, whatever. I don't really talk about it that much, and especially didn't approach the natural.
You never talk about that. No. And I think that's okay, because people, it's a very loaded word.
It's loaded, like, yeah. And I don't want people to be like me.
No.
Now, a lot of my clients have become vegan.
Yeah.
Not because I told them to become vegan.
But they practiced it and see that it works?
Not even that. They started thinking about their own diets. Okay. They started reading about stuff. They started moving their bodies. They started doing creative things. They started feeling better. And then the better they felt, they started reading more things and looking into more. And they just naturally get there.
And they become maybe more conscious about...
Exactly. What's consciousness is thinking. Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. So if I can help people craft their lives and learn how to find moments in their lives to think, they often will get to conclusions that I've gotten to, that you've gotten to, or in some areas, and maybe other areas I haven't gotten to there yet, but I'm thinking about things in my own life.
Yeah.
And so I might have gotten already to plant-based in terms of diet, but maybe I'm definitely, you know, getting areas in creatively back, you know, doing things now that I used to do more before. Now I'm kind of back into that. But if I can help people with my system to sort of, it's like, can I find time to think anymore? You know, and if you don't find time to think, you're either going to do what you were taught to do before or not taught to do, you know, but you, it's not you anymore. I don't want somebody to eat like I eat because I eat that way. If somebody eats like I eat, I want them to have gotten there on their own and thought about it and done it in a way that makes sense for them and makes them feel good. And then it them has nothing to do with
it. And then they can kind of make it their own.
Exactly.
Make it, you know, make the small adjustments that they need.
That's right. That fit to their life.
Yeah.
Not because I did it. You know, I don't want to, that's why like a training plan, you know, for running, I'm a runner too. And I used to follow those training plans right to the T. And then I finally, when I was doing my own approach, realized like these training plans don't know my life. They don't know I have three kids. They don't know that I only have 45 minutes to run in the morning. You know?
It's funny that you said that because I did my first marathon in April. And I was
like,
that was awesome to just do it, even though it was very tough.
Yeah.
But I started training or thinking about it in September, the year before. And I chose a plan that was very long, like 24 weeks.
Okay.
It was too much.
Yeah.
But I tried to follow it as good as I can. Yeah. But at the point when I was closing in, I had more and more work as a photographer. And I was doing more and more running. And it's family. And it's
your life. All of a sudden.
And I just overstrained myself. So when I was at the starting point, I was exhausted.
Oh, you were? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I made the same mistakes when I did my marathons. And I cramped the last few miles. Like, they weren't great races for me.
No.
They weren't great races
for me. The last like 10 kilometers was like just pushing myself.
Yeah.
Just being able
just to get down to the finish.
But that taught me that, okay. A friend of mine who's running, he's like, no, I don't care for training plans.
That's
I'm
right.
going to run whenever I feel and different terrains and so forth. And I'm like, but how do you know what to do?
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what to do
I
went out running.
Me neither.
I should run fast, slow, intervals, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But now that I've tried a lot of things, I know what works for me.
That's
right. So I just need to figure out my own.
Exactly. And what works for you isn't just about physiology and your body.
No,
it's what works for you means your family life and your work life and where you live. And so I learned that too. And we both learned the hard way.
I think that was my aha thing, that it was the other parts of my life as well.
That's right.
I was just carving out this 4 hours I'm going to run that week and 5 hours that week.
But that's right.
I just forgot that.
That's it.
The rest of life.
And the same exact thing could be said about a diet.
Yeah.
People do that too. And they do what the diet tells you to do, but it may not be appropriate for you on a given day because of other things. And when you forget about the other things, you lose every time. If you remember the other things, then you can kind of like, oh, I can't do this diet exactly, but I can do some stuff and I can learn from it. And now you know enough about running, unless you're trying to be a world champion. I'm not. I know enough
about
running
too late.
Yeah, me too. And it's sort of like, I don't care. I want to have fun. I want to have fun with it. So I know how to train. I know exactly how to train. Do I know how to train a professional runner? Nope, not a chance. Do I know how to train somebody who wants to run and feel healthy? Absolutely, because I know how to do that for myself. And that's to help them figure out what works for them.
When we talk about running, you actually have your own race, don't you?
I direct my own race, yeah.
Can you say just a little bit about that before?
Sure, yeah. I ran those two marathons. 49 now is when I was 45. So 4 years ago, I ran my first two marathons. And then in that same year, because I thought, well, I've never done this before, so I did kind of what you did. And then, but didn't love it. You know, and I wasn't really sure about it. And at that time, I read Born to Run. Have you ever read that book?
Yeah, it's a good one. That was what I read in the beginning.
Okay,
that was one of the things that got me running.
Okay.
Born to Run and Matt Fraser's Snow Meat Athlete mails that he sent me.
Uh-huh.
Like, today, go out,
take
a walk,
yeah, man,
run a little
awesome
bit.
Awesome that way, exactly.
Yeah,
so
he actually got me running.
He did.
So I sent him an email after I ran my first half marathon. I said, oh, Matt, thank you for getting me running and
cool.
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no,
and he answered, it was like, yeah,
he did.
Great.
Oh, no, he's great. Yeah, no, he's become a good buddy of mine. But,
yeah, I understand.
So because I was sort of like, what's next? And that book, I thought, ultra running, like maybe that's something I could kind of do. The podcast was in full swing at this time, so it was something I could, you know, share with people who are following me, and I'm going to try this. And, you know, again, I'm 46. I'm not like a professional runner, not going to be. And this is something so out of the box for me, you know, and how to kind of work through that whole thing. And you know, we have to understand, like, when we do a diet, it is completely different for some people, you know, and that's what ultramarathoning was for me. It was like, I'd already eaten well for a while, but this was something completely new. And so it was sort of like, how do I do this? And, so I started running and getting on trails. I hired I was listening to a podcast, Ultra Runner podcast, and there was a guy that happened to be on that day named Matt Flaherty, professional runner, sounded a really cool guy. Mm-hmm. And he said he was doing coaching in Indiana. And so I looked him up and he was totally inexpensive, like crazy. And so I just emailed him and said, can I get some help from you for like 2 months? And this was like 6 months before the race. He goes, yeah, sure. So he sort of helped me and that taught me a lot too, because he didn't hand me a training plan. I said, you know, I'm speaking in Wisconsin this week. He said, okay, so for this week, just do this. And then he would change it. And I was realized, oh, you can change these things. You don't have to, right? So he had a plan for me, but then I go speaking, and then he changed the plan. I was like, oh, you can always change the plan, you know? And so he did that, and he would sort of morph it, and he worked through some nutrition stuff and had me trying different. He was a really good coach that way, because he was like, today, you know, run the first 6 miles with no food at all, and then just have some gels or something the second half. Tomorrow, eat in the first half, but not the second half. The next day, have a peanut butter jelly sandwich and nothing else. You know, like he would kind of mix it up and so to find out what worked. It wasn't following him. That's
so
what
you
I
were thinking consciously about what works for.
He was
for your training.
Yeah, when he freed that up for me, because I realized like this is about a trial and error, about my body and my stress and my family and everything else. And it was like he made that happen, and then I was able later to learn how to do that for myself. But he was great that way. And so I ran my first ultra in 2000, I don't know what day it was, 46, so it was 3 years ago, and 2015. But in that training and finding out the trails around here through my training partner, who's also named Sid, she took me on all these. I met her just by chance. I realized, oh my God, this area has some trails. I never knew. As I was, you know, when I was doing marathon, I was just road running.
Yeah, road running, what I've noticed here in the States, it's impossible to run on the road. I was like, the other day, I was going on a run, and I thought, okay, I'm going to check out where the Stanford Inn is, mm-hmm. so I'm going to just run over there,
uh-huh.
and I didn't dare to cross the bridge.
Oh, that bridge is gnarly, that big river bridge. Yeah, I totally
have you ever run
try.
Over
there? Oh, all the time.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, all the time. But the bike lane is like 6 inches wide. You know, it's like crazy. Yeah,
I'm not used to that. So
yeah, no, it's...
And the
it's,
cars were passing.
Oh, yeah, no. It's crazy. Yeah, and
it's
so...
It's a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of trails, because the next morning I went into... you know, the trail that goes in by the river?
Yes, big river.
Yeah. So
that's part of my race.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the race. The first 10 miles go up that big river.
Okay, yeah. How long is that road? Because I kept running.
The big river? Yeah. You can go, I think right now, it goes pretty, you can go 10 miles in.
Okay,
yeah,
because
yeah.
I think I went maybe 6-7 kilometers in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, turned around, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a great run. But there's a ton of trails. And so as I was training for my first ultra with my training partner, I just... One day I was like, how is there not an ultra marathon around here? This is insane. Because there's nobody here. I mean, there's only 89,000 people in the entire county of Mendocino. This is a very small county. And in the town of Mendocino, there's only 1,000 people. This is not like, you know, people visit, but it's not that busy. So I started thinking, so I just kind of just started looking around the internet, and I emailed some people, most people who didn't email me back, but just said, how do you direct a race? And I got a contact from somebody who had directed some road marathons, but he sent me this guide that he got and said, here, try this. And some of it was not relevant to ultra marathoning, but in general, how to race direct, I got a kind of a good thing. And so I just went to state parks and a buddy of mine who works at the Stanford, and also Rick, who knows the trails really well, I said, can you help me craft a run that's a loop that's 31 miles of 50K?
So and it's one loop.
It's one loop.
It's one loop.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to see, I said, I don't know where you're going to go with it, but I want to see the river.
Yeah.
I want to see redwoods. I want to see the waterfall that I knew was at Russian Gulch. It's a state park. And I said, and I want to see the ocean. Yeah. Those are the things. If you can make me a loop, and I think within a week, he's like, here you go. Boom. 31. Oh, it was about 30. It was about 32.
And now it's pretty popular.
Honestly. It was popular. The first year, it sold out.
And then you, because it has a limit to
150.
150.
The first year was
that's 100. Very exclusive.
It is. The first year was 75. And I had 8 people signed up after the first month. And I thought, okay 8. Yeah. The next month after that, I was already up to 75. And then I bumped it up to 100 and I sold the rest of those 25. The next year was 150 and it sold out within a week. And this year sold out within 3 days. 150 and I'm keeping it at 150.
Yeah, I think you should.
It's intimate. It's a it's all the things that bothered me about other races I've done, like you park somewhere and you have to take a bus or a shuttle to the thing and it's dark, you're cold and it's too many people. And this was like, no, I'm going to have 150 tops. I'm going to have a loop so you can park right where the start is. You could show up to my race 5 minutes before the start line and get there. No problem. Like you don't have to get there early. Like I started at 7:30 because I didn't want to start earlier than that. Me.
And so 7:30. That's early enough.
Yeah, no, I was like 7:30. I'm starting at 7:30.
Do you have a time limit?
9.5 hours. So I leave people plenty of time to get through. Like all the things that I was just like, you know, I don't want people to end up. And then, and then like the Stanford Inn sponsors it. Jeff and Joan Stanford. And so, and the Ravens restaurant provides the food.
Oh, wow, that's
so nice. and I did
eat there and that was some really good food.
Good stuff. Good. Yeah, thank you. I mean, I can't take credit for it, but I love it. And
yeah,
and
but so you grow the plant.
A lot of the produce is good. They grow. Yeah, a lot of the produce they grow. And those Stanfords, nobody does it like they do it. I mean, period. There's nothing like that place almost in the world. And but the food at the party at the race is for everybody. Like I didn't want this thing of like have your bib number and check you off and you get food and everyone has to watch you eat. Like no, it's a party for everybody. Yeah. So there's food for cool. I mean people who watch the race to people who volunteer, everyone eats. There's beer. It's just fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's just fun.
Okay, Sid, I think we took it pretty far. I haven't seen how long.
What does 1606 mean? I'm joking. I know it. I know I know what the European clock looks like.
Why do you have the PM AM here?
I don't know. One of the dumber things. Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
It's like the metric system in the imperial.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that you actually, we're not going to talk about that, but maybe another time. Okay, maybe we'll Skype. But you did write another book called
Raising Healthy Parents, Small Steps, Less Stress, and a Thriving Family. So maybe, maybe another time we'll talk about kids.
Yeah, I'm actually reading that book now because I have kids and I'm a parent. And
yes.
I can kind of think what you're writing, or I want to read it and I look forward to it.
Cool.
Apart from that, I just want to say thank you for
my pleasure.
Taking me down to studio. And I'm going to ask you now on record if I can take a picture of you sitting there.
Absolutely.
And then I'll take a picture of you outside maybe.
Absolutely.
And then I'll leave it to it.
All right, cool. Yeah. Such a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it was really cool. This was my first interview doing it this way ever. All right. So hopefully there will be more.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Right on.
Okay.
Thanks. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, that was great, wasn't it? Wish I was back in Northern California. I'll probably travel there again. The funny thing is, as I'm recording this, the Sid Hillman Quartet is going to play in LA tomorrow, which will be the 10th of February, on a Sunday. So I guess that when you hear this, it's too late because this will be released on the 11th of February. But what I did, which is funny because it just shows that the world is really small. My friend Sondre Lerke, that is a musician, was on my last episode. He lives in LA. So today I just thought, I just sent him an email and said, hey, Sondre, the guy that's going to be next on my podcast is playing in a concert tomorrow. So how cool wouldn't that be if Sondre went to the concert and met Sid Garza Hillman, and they're both on my podcast? Yeah, the world is really strange. I was thinking something this morning, actually, recording before I was recording this, and my daughter, it's her birthday, actually, the day this is released, the 11th of February. She's going to be 10 years old. Wow, 10 years. That's pretty, she's pretty big now. It's been a few years where I've been thinking like, yeah, my kids are small. You know, I have a daughter at 6 also, and
you know, small. If you have kids, you know what I mean. It's like small kids are. That's it's a lot to handle. I think this is what Sid Garza Hillman talks about in his book "Raising Healthy Parents." Like, what raising healthy parents? You don't want to raise healthy kids. Yeah, you want to raise healthy kids, but you want to actually take care of yourself. If you want to raise healthy kids, you have to yourself be at a good place. And this is so true. When I became a father, I guess I was somewhere else completely than I am now. And what I have learned is that I need to absolutely take care of myself to take care of my kids. I need to be really strong. I need to be awake. I need to be fit. I need to be kind, which is hard sometimes to be kind, because you're going to feel when you have kids that they're not being fair to you. Absolutely. But then you just have to remember they are just kids. They are pushing the limits. They are. It's in our nature. So this morning when my daughter, she was sitting there and she loves to draw. So she was just sitting there and drawing. And she had this YouTube video that she was looking at because she had seen this video about somebody drawing like an optical illusion. And it was really cool. It looked like the drawing was completely real. It was really cool. It had depth. It had the feel of the light and the shadows and everything. And she looked at the video and she drew it. And it looked really good for a first draft. Really. But then she just was like, no, I failed. It was horrible. It was completely horrible. And I just tried to explain to her, well, nobody can do it perfectly the first time. But she just wouldn't listen. She thought it was horrible and everything. And I was just thinking, whoa, how do I explain to her that it's not possible to be perfect the first time? I can't. She just has to experience it. That's the only way. But as she was crying, I was thinking, I just have to let her experience this. And of course, it was before breakfast, so she was hungry. And she was a little tired because she fell asleep pretty late last night. All these things that we know as parents that will influence your mood, right? Yeah, you know what I mean. I think hopefully we'll take this podcast out with one of Sid Garza Hillman's songs from the Sid Hillman Quartet. So wherever you are, have a good day, and hopefully you will take one step at a time.
That a shimmering sun would go away. All the words I couldn't say, and there before me your heart breaks, and I just watch it break. Yeah. Not a place to hide, you are bare, and only to decide that I am coming with you, that I will finally see what you see. I have no place to hide, I am bare. Closed off from a simple few, you have learned to take. In a look I lay down with you. thoughtful moon would take its place. There are no more words that I could say. We are bare and our hearts break. That a threadbare moon would take its place. Simple view, you have learned to.